Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave. I am excited about doing this series with you. Let me just give you a brief overview. We're going to have a discussion at the beginning and the end of each of the four seminars, and I'll go on lecture mode for the presentation part so you don't have to worry about any background noise, but if you would manage the background noise in the beginning, star 6 to mute and remember to go back star 6 again to unmute for discussion, because I want to preserve some time at the beginning and the end for discussion. If you got your email, there are two questions that I sent around, and thanks for the responses I've gotten so far. I know there probably hasn't been time for a lot of you. The two questions, if we were to sit down right now, face-to-face, and you were to ask what's the most pressing or challenging question you have about this topic, what is it? And secondly, if you were to walk away at the end of our fourth seminar saying this is one of the best series you've ever attended, what would you walk away with? Those responses do help me in fashioning and framing some of the things that that I'm going to talk about. So I'm excited to share some ideas back and forth. Notice a couple of things. On the page you were directed to when you signed up, there is a link to download the annotated outline. I would suggest printing that so you can kind of listen and see if anything I'm saying makes sense, so you don't have to do a bunch of writing. And secondly, that page are the four ports for each of the four recordings, and the IT guy, Bill, will set it up probably within the next day, within 24 hours certainly, for recording for online playback. One little housekeeping thing, next Monday we won't meet, but we will meet October 17th, 24th, and 31st, and sorry about the Halloween deal. A special welcome to a couple of teams in Virginia. I just did an internal mentor training program with an amazing organization. And welcome to my new life story, new money story coaches, and to each of you who recently signed up. So our topic is something each of us has experienced, change and transition. And each of our clients, each of your clients, have and will experience it. So I can't lose by jumping right in and talking about it. So for anyone who hasn't responded, are there responses to those two questions, either of those two questions that you have as we begin? What's the most pressing question, and what would you like to walk away with? Anyone? One at a time, though. Now, don't make me feel lonely late on a Monday afternoon. I'm interested in your responses. Anybody want to? Let's start with the easy ones. Anybody want to say hi?
Hi, David. This is Norma.
Norma, hey, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Well, I wrote down my answers to my two questions.
I thought you guys were all doing a conference this week, and nobody in Virginia could attend.
No. I'm from Canada, David. Actually.
Oh, okay. Well, super.
Anyways, my answer to their first question was how to use transition coaching to move my clients forward.
Okay.
That's my most pressing question.
Okay. Is there a particular challenge in that? That sounds very broad and sounds like a kind of a developmental spectrum question of coaching. Is there something specific that you'd like to focus on that has been a sticking point or a particular challenge?
Well, I feel like, you know, probably the reason I signed up for this was I liked the fact that transitions was broad rather than it being, you know, we could be talking about divorce, we could be talking about job change, but I like the fact that maybe there's some commonalities amongst all transitions that I can use with my clients. So I'm a very step-by-step person. I like a nice, tangible plan that I can use with my clients to move them forward. So that's what I'm interested in.
You came to the right place.
Good.
This is exactly, we're going to talk in the seminar today about the dynamics of change and transition and look at the common elements, the developmental scope of both, and then do some application in applying the mind and brain sciences to behavior that changes, that will last, and look at some specific system that I have of doing that. So we're absolutely going to cover that.
Great.
Thank you for that. That's helpful.
Thanks.
Who else?
Hi, David. This is Peter from Salisbury, North Carolina. A little bit of trivia,
Peter,
the birthplace of the Salisbury steak.
Okay.
I don't know if it's true or not, but it's in our folk.
Okay, that sounds good. Go ahead.
What I would like to take away from this is I do an awful lot of training internally in our organization, and we have just gone through a merger. Our global parent companies have gone through a merger, and the U.S. companies will be doing some significant transitioning over the next couple of years, and I wanted to be prepared to help many of our associates as we go through these transitions.
Well, that sounds great. Peter, are you an HR or are you an internal coach?
I'm in HR. I'm a senior learning specialist.
Excellent. You're in a very prime position to be a catalyst for a lot of that, so that sounds great. Thanks for doing that. Any more specific questions you have, or answers to those two questions that you have, especially in the context that you're applying it? Any challenges that are notable? Any particular challenges, Peter, that you've noticed in your work?
The biggest challenge is that we've got, I think, an awful lot of denial going on, in that while we know change is coming, so many people are just operating business as usual and making some very long-term plans, even beyond when the transitions are supposed to take place.
Okay.
And then the underlying sense that nobody will talk about, but I sense in an awful lot of conversations that I'm having with people, is that they're really scared.
Yeah. That makes total sense. We're going to talk about some aspects of that from a number of perspectives. So, thank you for mentioning that. That's
mm-hmm.
very helpful for me to know as well. Other responses to those two questions? Well, if not, I'm going to go ahead and launch into some discussion. I'll put us on lecture mode, and I'll preserve some time at the end, so jot down any questions you have, and anything we don't cover at the end, feel free to either fire them to me in an email or bring them to the next seminar that we do. And I know that there are some who are going to be listening to the seminar on the recording and won't be live. Okay, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about, in this seminar, the dynamics of change and transition. What's your story? When we want someone to know who we are, we share stories, perhaps of our childhoods, our families, of what's important to us. When we know people well, we know their stories, what's important, what shaped and molded them, the trials and turning points, perhaps, that have tested them. Our own story is a significant organizer of our experience, a continuity of where we've been, where we are now, and where we'll go. Stories define, orient, and guide us. A good story is never more necessary than at the time of change and transition, a time that's unsettling, confusing, uncertain, insecure. Now, as those of you who have trained with me know, that story is the metaphor for the coaching models that I have, and this is an application here as a way of organizing some of what we hear and some of our intervention. The ability to craft a good story at this crucial time is significant to the success of everything that will follow. A good story bridges past and present to make sense of where we are, where we were, and the uncertain future. A critical element of our well-being is how we understand what happens to us and why. some of the approaches derail, actually, because they attempt to change someone's behavior without considering what it does to their personal stories, their internal story, their identity. We're going to return to that. Now, the change, let's talk about the dynamics of change first. The change is the event, the situation. You move to a new city, divorce, retire, have a significant loss, take a new job, merge companies, lose an old one, change careers. As we focus on change, we address the rituals of change, the work tools, the strategic goals. First, the idea of change will create anticipation. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, trepidation, even anxiety. And, as Peter mentioned, denial comes right in here because, well, I'll deal with that next Tuesday. Next, if you continue rather than return to your comfort zone, expansion into the new experience. Then, finally, mastery. Now, two additional aspects of experiencing change may seem paradoxical, but you're going to hear them in certain ways, not directly. Every step forward means relinquishing a past position. In other words, someone must mourn. They must say goodbye emotionally as well as practically to a familiar, maybe long-held and practiced old story, even one that doesn't work that well. This is a process. It's a developmental step. It's not something you can just say and make it so or recognize it and change it. It's like saying goodbye to an old friend, to give up a habit or a pattern of behavior, or even the hope of getting the old story just right or doing it better is going to make it work. And secondly, the more subtle aspect in learning something new and creating change is an injury to self-esteem. Now, this carefully crafted old story, even with some aspects of identity attached, is replaced by something better. So it's kind of a narcissistic injury. The very best that we could do, we find that there is something better. Now, a sidebar here. Our clients don't think of what they're experiencing, what they're going through, as a story. It's just the way things are. It's reality. A story is our concept that we may use to help us understand and integrate and create some, co-create some strategies for change. So, I see at least six components in this dynamic of change. Now, these are not headlines. You're not going to see signs that you can label and say, well, that's it. And so that's what Kruger was talking about. These are just for your reflection to think about as internal conceptual markers. The myth that there's a perfect choice. The illusion that the perfect choice will solve all problems. The disappointment that nothing is perfect, there isn't even an ultimate arbiter of fairness. The development, the recognition that no one's going to take care of it for you. The growth to take the next best action. And when you take the next best action, to take the next best action after that. And finally, the consolidation, the happy, sad experience resulting. Happy about the effectiveness of not constructing an obstacle to move ahead, and sad about mourning an old story. Now, every transition begins with an ending, a change event, and we have to let go of the old before we can begin the new. Every beginning ends something. And as Agnes Allen, American writer, said, almost anything is easier to get into than out of. Changing to a better job or career may ironically cause a similar grief and confusion as the sad end of an important relationship in the past. The reason it's important is to recognize that this is some of the feelings that you experience today that have nothing to do with the present ending, but they resonate with similar experiences in the past. Letting go is difficult. In the 5th century B.C., Herodotus, Greek historian, said, diseases always attack men when they're exposed to change. even when we look forward to a change and anticipate it eagerly, some of us still hold on what we used to be, and we wonder whether the change was a good or bad idea. We are defined, and perhaps define ourselves, by our roles and relationships, those we like as well as ones we don't. Letting go isn't a big and ambiguous experience. New skills are needed for negotiating the passage, separating the old from the new. And that's exactly what we're focusing on right here. The characteristic ways of coping with endings need to be understood, at least especially by the mentor coach. Each person has his own style or her own style of ending and new beginning. People tend to respond to endings in their own typical way, to have characteristic reactions to ending and a similar mental state and mood. It's part of an attachment pattern. Some of the most common styles of ending, four of the most common, abrupt, and that's designed to deny the impact often and the meaning of change, slow and gradual. It can be so that it's difficult to see that anything important is really happening. Another, external focus. Some people learn to cultivate a subtle way of covertly inviting people to act upon them when change is in the air. And finally, active versus passive, proactive versus reactive as a primary style. Some people work to establish blamelessness in regard to endings. She just walked out, no warning, no nothing, she just left me. It's like someone who shouts, "I didn't do it," when the police arrive, and of course calls attention to himself and makes everybody suspicious. How do you approach change? How you do approach change comes from the style you've developed for dealing with endings. That style is likely to reflect early experience as well as later influence and be consistent over time and situation. Typically, someone repeats a behavior pattern, as with other important losses. One person may feel the grief and anxiety for the entire group. Another comforts the mourner. Another takes over the routine responsibility. Another assumes control for the situation. The kind of roles you see in a family are often the roles you see in an organization. Although it's advantageous to understand your own style of endings, a part of you will resist that understanding with passion. Now, we're not talking about just the big endings here, divorce, career transition, job loss, children leaving for college, retirement. Even the small endings have their own personality that's consistent with the big endings. The same mind shapes the same attachment patterns over time from early on. Think about how you tend to act at the end of an evening at a friend's house or after a night on the town. Do you drag things out by starting new activities and conversations when others seem to be ready to leave? Or do you suddenly say it was a nice evening and abruptly dash out? Did you say goodbye to everyone or leave ahead of plan so you could avoid the goodbyes? Notice how the small and large endings can be the same, leaving a job or moving from a neighborhood, as well as having dinner with friends. The person who leaves early and the one who lingers and stays late both avoid endings in their own way, as well as the discomfort of the disruption. A dasher and a lingerer share the same dynamic. There are things we don't want to happen but have to accept. Things we don't want to know but have to learn. People we can't live without but have to let go. It's the ending that makes the beginning possible. So here are some principles of letting go. There are 10. These are in your outline. Accept the reality as well as the importance of the subjective losses, of the meaning of the loss. That's the antithesis of denial. 2, acknowledge the loss openly. 3, accept and expect overreaction. Overreaction becomes about because of the emotional impact of the loss as well as past experiences with losses. 5, compensate for the losses. Ask, for example, what can I give back to balance what's been taken away or lost? What can I engage? Learn as much as possible about the loss in order to benefit from it. 6, and this is important, define what's over and what isn't over. 7, mark the endings. Rather than just talking about the endings, create actions or activities that dramatize them. When Rene McPherson took over the leadership of Dana Corporation, he saw that operations were choked by a culture of rules that nobody could remember. In a management meeting, his first management meeting, he piled all the company manuals on a table. They formed a stack almost 2 feet tall. He then pushed them to the floor and held up a single piece of paper on which the corporate principles were typed. He said, "These are our new operating rules." 8, treat the past with respect. 9, take a piece of the old story with you as an emblem. 10, endings ensure the continuity of what really matters. And the past, the good old days, will be idealized at times, denigrated at times. The changes anyone experiences are different than anything they ever experienced before. The transition process by which people can get through change is a system that's well mapped. And I want to talk about that now, the dynamics of transition. So the change event is the snapshot. The change process is the wide angle view. The transition is the time-lapse photograph. The transition is the process of the internal story of change, a shift in orientation, even self-definition. Transition is awareness of the seasonal cycles, while, of course, you have to attend to the daily weather. As you respond to change and embrace transition, you let go of the old story, the outlived chapter, and evolve to your new story. You transform a new identity to internalize changes, to sustain and enhance them. The transition story provides the coherence that will reassure in the present, and it will foreshadow the future. The person you were yesterday is the person you are today, and the person you will be tomorrow, only more so. Yet, seemingly paradoxically, old stories need to be mourned, and along with them, the self left behind. You also have your own characteristic way of a new beginning, just as with endings. Change and renewal seems to involve new relationships, but they can also involve new places or projects. For some, it begins with a new state of mind, a new feeling, a self-image, a goal. Sometimes the beginning results from careful and conscious effort, but for many people, important new beginnings have a mysterious and sometimes even accidental quality to them, though we think we take charge of our lives and plan carefully to start again after an ending. Some of the most important beginnings take place in the unfocused darkness outside our awareness. Here's an example from someone I know and like a great deal. 2 years after my divorce, I was at an author's conference in Austin. I was planning to leave Saturday after the last conference meeting. I had just enough time to drive to my ranch between Austin and Houston, where I spend weekends, to catch the sunset. One of the measures of the quality of my life is the number of sunsets I'm at the ranch, usually on weekends, on the porch with my two riding companions, a cigar and a single malt scotch, watching the sunset over the lake and trees. But I decided for some unknown reason at the writer's conference to stay for the social hour, to wine and cheese event. Nothing, by the way, to compare to any single malt scotch. Never mind the cigar and sunset. There I met my future wife. 2 years later, we would marry on that porch that I didn't get to that evening for sunset, at sunset with her children and mine attending. That was 12 years ago. Without a transition, change simply rearranges the furniture. people imagine that they can prepare for retirement by making specific changes, such as adequate financial preparation, a place to live, and developing new interests. And I can tell you from weekend retreats that I do with a buddy called What's Next Exec for people who own businesses and CEOs within a year of retirement, they have no clue, and they know that they need to work on the business of their next career, whether that's retirement, a new contribution, whatever. The challenge is the transition, and change only prepares you for the transition. People have to let go of the outlived chapters of their life story and find a new one to replace it, or the outlived chapters of the business story to create a new one. At times, rituals and celebrations further the process of transition as well as serve as markers. Every lifetime has its own unique rhythm, and the personal developmental steps for both change and transition deserve attention. Transition is a process. It takes time. No matter how many people you put on the job, it still takes 9 months to make a baby. So there are basically three components of transition. First, there's an ending. Then, a neutral zone, an important directionless time in between, filled with mourning, with work, and with getting ready, even though you may not know what getting ready is for. Then you finish with a new beginning. So let's look at those three, because I think they can be very illuminating, very helpful for you as a reference as you're listening to clients. First, the ending. As I mentioned, every transition begins with an ending. Even though it sounds backwards, endings always come first. Willingly or unwillingly, an ending. The first task is to let go, whether at the individual or the organizational level, whether the source of transition is an external change or internal development. The transitions always start with an ending. To start doing things a new way, you have to end the way you're doing them now. The most common mistake is to add a new pattern to the ones already existing. That applies to all of behavior, not just change and transition. To think you can add a new pattern without disrupting an old one. The impact of the transition doesn't necessarily bear a direct relationship to the importance of the change that triggered it. One person can be brought to an abrupt standstill by a divorce or job loss, while another person takes it in stride. Someone else may come to terms with a debilitating illness, yet be demolished by the loss of a pet. And some people are sort of one tragedy behind. They can only grieve for the last one when there's a new focus. Now, here's one dramatic way to mark an ending of a story. And some of you have heard this before. Spanish explorer Hernando Cortes came ashore with his men at Veracruz, and he knew that his men were extremely reluctant about the exploration ahead and knew the danger. Some had outright called it hopeless. Faced with a continent of unknown adversaries, each person in his party was ambivalent about moving ahead or turning back. Cortes burned the ships. So, there are some components of the ending process. There are essentially five aspects of an ending experience. Now, these may not come in order. I'll talk about that in a little bit, but just to conceptualize these components so that it will be an organizer for what you're listening for with your clients and what you're being a catalyst for. One is disengagement. Usual events disengage from the context and the identity in which people know themselves, who they are. Divorce, death, job change, move, illness. This disengagement begins a process of change. Two, dismantling. Old familiar behaviors and habitual practices are taken apart a piece at a time. the gradual transition involves slowly unpacking the lost relationship, including the lost identity that's part of it. An ending stops what used to be. It's not the old way anymore, but it's not yet the new way as this dismantling occurs. So someone's in between. They don't have the old default pattern. They don't have the new one in place yet. It's exquisitely uncomfortable. We need to resonate with that emotional experience with the client to have a togetherness in that, to create a common ground of empathic resonance. Three, disidentification. Ending connections with what used to be, you also lose an old way of defining yourself. Old friends you didn't inherit in the divorce. I still miss some of them. Often people describe this phase as not being quite sure who they are. I was sure of me. I wasn't sure of them anymore. Back to the text here. Now, I thought about this loss a good deal when I came to terms with retiring from my practice of teaching psychiatry and psychoanalysis to become an executive mentor coach for 25 years of practice. And 7 years prior to that of medical school and residency, I identified with being a doctor. I wondered if using the MD after my name was a way of hanging on to that identity, though I clearly knew I was no longer practicing, nor would I ever return to it. The old identity can potentially stand in the way of transition as well as of transformation and self-renewal. Four, disenchantment. Coexisting with a still vivid picture of the way things are is the split-screen image of the way things were. Disenchantment is the discovery that in some sense, your world indeed is simply no longer the way it used to be. Disenchantment is a recurrent experience throughout the lifetime of anyone who has the courage to trust and believe in the first place. So everything we're talking about now, there are whispers to shouts of these experiences throughout our lives. This is simply, because of the crystallization of some event or issue, a chance to examine, not just now, but the way we deal with things, and perhaps revisit others and reintegrate at a newer level. Some significant transitions began with disenchantment, loss of a job, loss of a relationship. Listen for this possible distinction in your clients. The disenchanted person moves on, while the disillusioned person goes through the play again with new actors, always on a perpetual quest for the elusive, not letting go. And finally, five, disorientation. Disorientation affects a sense of place, space, as well as time. The usual way of structuring time even changes. The future is unclear. Now, these elements of ending are not in sequence, as I mentioned, or in any particular order at all. For example, in a divorce, one partner may experience disidentification and disorientation and then decide to act, which can lead to disengagement. Now, if you're scoring that play, it's 3-5-1. The other partner, unaware, supposedly, of the impending change, begins an ending with disengagement and the challenge of disenchantment, and then becomes disoriented. That's 1-4-5. So there's no normal or natural order to this sequence, and there isn't any normal order of reactions to an ending. Endings are the first rather than the last act of the play. Notice that only the first, disengagement, refers exclusively to external things. The second, dismantling, can be either internal or external. And the last three, disidentification, disenchantment, disorientation, those three are all internal. It's the internal things that hold us to the past, yet we often try to deal only with the external issues, something that we think we have more control over. to leave a relationship, a job, or to move across the country. This focus uses change to avoid transition. To storm out of a job because of a bad boss, rather than discover what it is that keeps you finding and agreeing to work for such bosses, for example. To end another relationship rather than letting go of the behaviors, beliefs, and attitudes that keep choosing the same people and recreating the same relationships. Remember your friend from college who had numerous relationships, yet the dozens of faces were on the same woman or the same man? After someone struggles initially with the change and then begins to grapple with the transition, this is the true work, the beginning of the transformation, the mid-phase, the neutral zone. A resistance to transition is often not the problem of giving up a job or relationship or even an identity. The real challenge is the time of nothingness that awakens old fears, even about abandonment and death, and certainly a loneliness. People in transition will create new ways to return to the old story. Every ending is followed by some distress or confusion. We can expect this as part of a transition. Ending, confusion, new beginning. People will resist both the change and the transition. They will return to the familiar. That's how our minds and brains work. That's how we're wired. We can, as coaches, reframe this return to the familiar as a way of measuring progress to see how far you've come, an opportunity to validate your commitment to move forward. This in-between time of transformation is the real work of letting go and prepares the foundation for the next stage. It's important not to rush through this neutral zone too quickly in order to avoid or minimize the disruption. This is a very important time for a work in progress. When I went through my career transition, I needed a time in between before I began my new career. I knew I was a medical professional in my mind and heart, and I would be tempted to revert to that identity and style of being when in doubt about my new endeavor, which is why I made a wholesale transition to retire completely from my medical practice and close that out in every way, then to spend some time at my ranch writing and physically working before I began training for certification as a professional coach. Now, in another era, the person in transition left the village and went into a forest or desert to remain for a time. Removed from old connections and without old identities, the old reality changed as well. This in-between time of empty space fostered a generation of a new sense of self. So actually, mine was way closer to caveman than I realized. In fact, in yesterday's Sunday New York Times review of books, Gregory Cowell said, "If your marriage fails, you go for a long walk in the woods." Now, when someone doesn't allow this essential period of time to create a transition, some important work can be avoided. If transition is treated as an event, like crossing the street, a necessary process is averted. It will be tempting to try to do this because it means you don't have to do the work and don't have to experience all the discomfort and the uncertainty. Often someone, without even knowing why, finds ways of being alone and away from familiar circumstance. Sometimes it's a long weekend alone in a quiet place. They're responding to their innate intuition. Having the time to think things over and not do much of anything is the point. One of the significant transitions in work life is an internal one. It's likely that sometime after the age of 40, people transition from being motivated by the chance to demonstrate competence to being motivated by the chance to find personal meaning in work and its results. This is the shift from the question of how to the question of why. Competence begins to lose its force as a source of motivation. It doesn't stimulate the pleasure centers in the brain in the same way over time. To do the same thing over and over becomes less challenging, less invigorating. The brain plays a role in this process. Dopamine is the brain chemical that induces excitement by anticipating pleasure or reward. This dopamine experience releases and motivates people to take risks. The risk is exciting. It adds to the dopamine release. But neuroscientists have shown that anticipating a reward is even more exciting than actually receiving it. Well, why is this? Because receiving a reward actually shuts down this anticipatory release of dopamine and along with it the accompanying positive feelings and higher energy. The brain shifts to another system mediated more by norepinephrine. It's the chemical system of marathons, not sprints. This explains the paradox that the expectation of event can be more exciting than the actual event. This has been demonstrated in a number of arenas. An investor will feel more positive when expecting a stock to rise, yet not be quite as excited as anticipated when it actually does arise. The purchase of a big-ticket item, a new car, isn't as exciting as expected, and it can even lead to buyer's remorse, the sense that, you know, this doesn't read like the excitement that I anticipated. I don't really know I made the right decision here. Or, practically, clients hit plateaus in coaching after a couple of months and consider suspending work. It's like, is this all there is? So what we can do in coaching is to foster attitudes that promote curiosity, openness, and which introduce new learning, for example, to ladder challenges and successes. And by knowing this phenomenon, we can address it and explain it as natural development. Now, two questions to focus on the meaning of transition at this particular time. One, what is it time to let go of in my life right now? Transition starts with letting go. An important distinction between a change and transition is that change is focused on reaching a goal, and transitions begin with letting go of what no longer fits the life stage you're in. Each person has to figure out what no longer fits, and it's usually internal rather than external. The transition begins with letting go of something you've assumed or believed, some way you've always seen yourself, some world outlook or attitude toward others. And two, what is waiting to make its entrance into my life? And this may be a question approached at a time after meditation to really get focused and get quiet. The answer is usually something internal, subjective, often in the shape of an idea or a question you ask yourself. It may feel like a message to you, a message that something is standing just outside the door of everyday awareness, waiting for your attention. We have to deal with endings all of our lives. Yet, curiously, we often handle them poorly. We either take them too seriously by confusing them with finality, or see them as something without sequel, forgetting that they're simply the first phase of a whole process, a necessary precondition for transition and self-renewal. So at the same time, we fail to take them seriously enough because they scare us, and we try to avoid them. I saw this in my therapy and psychoanalytic practice. It's not the loss of someone that creates problems, but the failure to internalize that person and relationship that created problems. For some, their present consists at least in part of a past they have yet to let go of. An illustration of the emptiness of this neural zone is Leo Tolstoy's description. I felt that something had broken within me on which my life had always rested, and that I had nothing left to hold on to, and that morally my life had stopped. And yet I could give no reasonable meaning to any action of my life. And I was surprised that I had not understood this from the beginning. My state of mind was as if some wicked and stupid jest was being played upon me by someone. I asked myself, what will be the outcome of what I do today? What shall I do tomorrow? What will be the outcome of my life? Why should I live? Why should I do anything? The reasons for this emptiness between the old life and the new include: the process of transformation is essentially a death and rebirth process. It's not a mechanical modification. The process of disengagement and reintegration is the source of renewal, just the way an apple tree needs the cold of winter. The emptiness between the stages of a life journey provides a perspective on the stages themselves. This in-between time provides access to a view, a perspective that can occur nowhere else. So here's now a summary of the creative use of this neutral zone. 1, embrace setbacks, losses, disadvantages as entry points into new solutions. 2, establish a regular time and place to be alone, to step back, to take stock, to question the usual, and to come up with new and creative solutions. 3, provide opportunities for others important in your change and transition to step back and review with you as well. 4, accept your need for this time in the neutral zone. Make sense of your experience in this time so that it doesn't feel like a dead-end road. Understanding this transition phase helps avoid the traps of trying to move forward too fast or going into reverse to re-enter the old situation. Trying to speed things up disrupts the necessary process that occurs. It's a process, not an event. 5, engage in training and techniques of discovery and innovation. Become informed about the change and transition process. What you're doing just now and will help your clients do. Take this opportunity to discover what you really want. 6, engage in experimentation. Try out ideas that you wish you'd have or would have the chance to try. After I closed my practice, I considered my experience as founder and CEO of a couple of healthcare corporations, an involvement with a third startup with partners that went through venture capital funding to merger or acquisition, to think about really entering the corporate world to become an executive. Now, thankfully, that lasted about 25 seconds. 7, keep a log of neutral zone experiences. 8, take this pause in the action of your life to write an autobiography. It doesn't have to be published. Just get something about it in the output channel. It will help you think through some things. 9, think of what would be unlived in your life if it ended today. 10, reflect consciously on the present transition experience in your own life. The neutral zone, the time between the old life and the new, is a rich time for such insight. And 3, you finish with a new beginning. A new beginning follows the ending, and the new beginning involves changing how you see yourself, even aspects of your identity. It's when the endings are finished that we can truly begin. Again, the ending allows a new beginning. We may not always know when the ending is complete and when we've been in the neutral zone long enough, especially when it's a genuinely new beginning. For a time, we may not even know which is the real path. Think about the important things in your own past. You bumped into a friend you hadn't seen for years, and he told you about a job at his company that opened up just that morning. You met your spouse-to-be at a party you really hadn't planned to go to and almost skipped. You picked up a book that changed your life because it was the only one lying on the friend's coffee table when you stopped by for an unexpected visit. The lesson in these experiences is that when we are ready to make a new beginning, we will find or create an opportunity. When you're ready to learn, a teacher will appear. There will be a wine and cheese event. New beginnings often occur with an internal realignment rather than an external shift. When we're aligned with deep longings, when needs and ideals align with purpose, that's where passion resides. Each step forward is inevitably going to set off an internal warning system. The brain's error detection mechanism is going to read, something's wrong. It's not a signal to retreat to an old way of being. Also, never underestimate the change back pressure from the system. Your family, your company, it's their self-statement of reaction to change. Each of their brains has an error detection mechanism, too, that says this isn't right. It's an attempt to restore normal order and not do the work of change. They're not against you. They're just responding naturally. It's the way their brains work, too. A group or system has a status quo bias and inertia, just like an individual does. Jung said, the most important problems can't be solved. They have to be outgrown. The most important distinction here is this. Have you really moved through the endings and the neutral zone to find the beginning you now want to follow? Or is this beginning a way of avoiding an ending or aborting the neutral zone experience? One thing you can do is to begin to identify yourself with the final result of the new beginning. What's it going to feel like when you've actually done what you're setting out to do? That's the reason we do what we do, is how we imagine we're going to feel. We understandably have ambivalence about new beginnings. We have not established a comfort zone. We have not grooved a default mode in our minds and brains. We do not know the outcome. All three reasons our minds and brains say, whoa, let's go back to what we know. So, beginnings may reactivate some old anxieties as well as making it very real that the ending has happened. The risk and uncertainty of the new beginning will resonate with past anxiety, perhaps even trigger old memories of failures, and a new beginning will erode the equilibrium of the neutral zone, even if it's temporary. For example, one of the most challenging aspects of being an adult and taking care of ourselves is the fact that we have to come to the end of the past to hope that somebody else is going to do it for us. And it's more difficult to let go of what never was, even than what was traumatically so, because you have to give up hope of ever having it exactly in the way that you wanted, and with it the illusion that there's an ultimate arbiter of fairness. New beginnings need to have a clear sense of purpose. To reinforce a new beginning, you'll have to evolve a new identity that replaces the old one. In the beginning, take things step by step. Recognize the assumptions and resist the temptation that some other route would go smoothly, with events always exciting and meaningful. It's like comparing yourself with someone else. You're comparing your inside to their outside. It's not an apples-to-apples comparison. It is important in a new beginning not to be preoccupied with results. For example, rather than each interview that does not produce a job being a failure and everything that happened being a mistake, reframe the process as an activity where each interview teaches something, creates new contact, deepens an understanding of the process and of oneself. So this is an important aspect of a new beginning, to shift your purpose from the goal to the process of reaching the goal. For example, the new job is to find a job. Every transition is a transition from something into something. Each of these transitions corresponds to internal changes and integration of a new identity with elements of the old one. There are many endings, many little beginnings, with emptiness and creation in between. It's a process. There are very few times that we actually have direct contact with our future selves. We seldom review our present circumstances as they might appear to a relative objective future self. When we plan ahead, we specify goals rather than future development of identity or states of mind. We look at goals, in other words, This may contribute to looking back at our past with a bit of alienation or disbelief, almost as if somebody else lived it. Exceptions occur at certain moments in life, prompted perhaps by the excitement of a major event that we look ahead in time and think, I'm going to remember this moment forever. This awareness seems to change present experience, to enhance it with a special lighting and sharp focus. So here are some considerations to reinforce the new beginning. Be consistent. This is the best way to get an idea of how something's going to work, to be consistent and totally immersed in the process. Shrink the change to ensure stepwise successes. Evolve a new identity along with the changes. And celebrate small successes. In 10 or 20 years, when we look back on present time, laced among experiences, will inevitably be some envy and regret. We envy the younger self who could relatively do so much and will regret that younger self did not do more or different or better. We may wonder why we learn too little, love too small, risk too low, spend too much time in routine and distraction. This view from a future self looking back to the present can be very informative. So I want to end with a question and a challenge. Imagine a photograph of yourself 100 years from now. What is the story you most want your great-grandchildren to tell about you? The challenge. What if right now is a turning point for you? The time your grandchildren will tell stories about years from now. The time you awakened your deep passion and acted on it. The time you did what you were always meant to do. Or, this moment of truth may be a brief awakening, silenced by the sensible obstacles you're familiar with constructing. In that case, your grandchildren will have to be content telling stories about your favorite sports team or what great cookies you used to bake. It will all depend on how brave you are. We're in discussion mode. We just have about 3 minutes. I thought we'd have longer. I got into too many stories. I'm operating on the same outline that you are, and I apologize that we have less time. Your thoughts or clarifications or questions? I'm very interested in your take on this.
Dave, this is Kip.
Hey, Kip. Welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing fine. Just a question. Could you just say a little bit more about, in the beginning when you mentioned common styles of letting go, external focus?
Yeah, to focus on something externally as a way of moving away from an internal focus and the discomfort, either of the experience or the cause, the fact that something happened that we didn't want it to happen in that way, and we want to disavow or disown or disregard our own role in writing that story. So we want to look at, we want to be Trump and blame the microphone. You know, it's always something else, you know. So it's easier first to look externally, and then when that fails and we have to look at, well, maybe – you know, maybe I am writing my own story, so I have to recognize and own it in order to assess it and decide what to change and look at that in a systematic way. And you know this, Kip, but for everybody else, we're going to be looking at a systematic way of addressing how to understand the elements of the story we create and then how to change it. So thanks for that. Does that clarify, Kip?
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah, super. Thank you. Others? Other thoughts or questions?
Hi, Dave. This is Philippa.
Hey, Philippa. Welcome. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I came in late. I came in at the point when you were talking about the ending and disengagement and that group there. But what really resonated with me is the neutral zone. because I am in transition right now from work to full-time coaching.
I
really fully understand what you were saying, and thank you so much for bringing it out like this so that I can even understand it more. That neutral zone area, what did I get from that? Let me see.
As you know, it's a very active process, and forth and back and back and forth throughout.
Yes, and it's important not to rush it. And I'm so glad to hear that. So I realize that I'm not really rushing it, because I realize it's a process, but I wasn't too clear on what it was all about. So thank you for clarifying it tonight.
Thank you. And here's a principle that you can apply with clients. You will always know the difference when you really look at it between dosing, timing, and titrating versus procrastination.
Yes.
And that's an important distinction.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Well, hold on to any other questions you have. We're out of time. Thank you all for your participation and energy, and for those of you who have sent responses to the questions and did some discussion in this seminar. If you have responses to the questions or things that we didn't cover, fire an email to me, and we'll pick up, remember, in 2 weeks, because we won't meet next Monday. I'll send a reminder of that. So thanks very much. I look forward to our coming seminars.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
So long,
thank you. Thank you, Dr. Dave.
Thank you.
Hey.
Bye.